weekly pulse on all things green and gold leading up to week 6 already in the NFL. Packers Cardinals coming up Sunday at Lambeau Field. We have a lot of recapping to do. Packers Rams this past weekend. Packers get a win. We have a lot of previewing to do of Packers Cardinals. But I feel like there is a much bigger situation at hand, and we record this Thursday morning. So yesterday, Jason spent time at Lambeau Field talking to Matt LaFleur, talking to some of the players in the locker room. And I don't know if putting a bow on it is necessarily the right way to phrase it, Jason, with Romeo Doubs. But certainly some more information, some more conversations had around what happened with Romeo Doubs last week. Obviously missing two practices. Doug Collins, the vice president of security, has to show up to his house. He's ultimately suspended for the game against the Rams, the LA area native, and now returns to the team yesterday, but did not make himself available to the media. Matt LaFleur, obviously, kind of declining comment throughout the week. Jordan Love declining comment throughout the week. Christian Watson making some comments about how it might take some time to get back to normal. What do you make of this situation now, almost 6 days, 7 days later, after all the news comes out, Jason? Because it is a really unique situation, one that I've never seen before.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into that. Oh, wait, that's Matt LaFleur. I'm going to get into it. I have no problem getting into it. So here's what bothers me, and anybody who listened on Thursday morning to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy heard me talk about this as well. I don't understand how publicly saying, yeah, look, Romeo addressed the team. We're moving forward. We're not going to get into what he said, but he addressed the team, and we're going to work through this, and we're a team, we're a family, blah, blah, blah. What would be the downside of that? I don't think there is one. So why didn't they? Why, when Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love were asked if a yes or no question, which I know you love, is a good one.
I do.
Yes or no question. Did Romeo address the team? They both responded with, I'm not going to get into that. Well, to me, you answer that way because he didn't address the team.
That's what it sounds like.
Right? Like, is that an unreasonable view for me to hold? I don't think so. Which then leads to further questions. Why didn't you force him to address the team? Why did he choose not to address the team? Why is Christian Watson, who, by the way, we should all have a friend like Christian Watson, man. Like, the dude took up for Romeo yesterday in a big time way. Talking about mental health, talking about how absolutely concerned he was when he didn't come to work on Thursday. Worried that something really, really bad had happened. And so it's great that Christian Watson cares about him to that degree. But if I'm a teammate of his, and he can't bring himself, I don't care if, you know, he doesn't like public speaking or whatever it might be. And again, I'm not unsympathetic to if he has some sort of mental, I don't call it mental health issue, because I feel like there are people, and I'm not saying he's one of them, but I feel like there are people, now that we are more cognizant of mental health, that when they need an excuse, that's where they're going. And I'm not saying that that's what Romeo Doubs is doing here. I want to be very clear. But I'm not saying that it's out of the realm of possibility either. And so whatever the case is, it's one thing to not address us. I personally believe that you should. Not for me. You don't owe it to me. But you owe it to the people who buy your jersey, the yep. people who buy popcorn and Coors Lights at the games. Like, you owe it to them because they help pay your salary. You don't owe it to me. You don't have to talk to Jason Wilden. That's fine. But if he didn't talk to the team as a whole, I have a problem with that. We've all been on teams. We all understand the importance of being a teammate and not apologizing to the team because they needed him against the Rams, and he was not available because of his own actions. That I would have an issue with. And so, you know, the conversations I had with Bo Melton, with Jaden Reed, with Christian Watson, they all indicated that their conversations with him were one-on-one, that they were not in front of the team. And to me, that just lets this story continue on. And sooner or later, by the way, NFL rules stipulate he does have to talk to the media.
Right.
So now, whenever that actually happens, you know he's going to get questions about this. And he can claim, he's going to say, I'm not going to answer them. But that's only going to make it worse, too. So I don't understand what went on yesterday. I would like to have more clarity. But I don't think that they helped put this behind them with the way yesterday played out.
All right, really good stuff. I have a few follow-ups on this situation, then we'll move on. One of which actually has something to do with your actions, but we'll get to that momentarily. So you say NFL rules, because I know a guy like Jair hasn't spoken to the media in a few weeks, and I don't know if he did yesterday or not. But what
he did after the game, he did a couple games ago after the game. Like, we don't get after, like, the NFLPA does not, and the NFL does not get after you right away. You get some warnings. Jimmy Graham got a bunch of warnings, and he still said he wasn't talking. So then he got a $25,000 fine. Wow. That's how it works.
Okay. So what's the frequency that you need to speak in?
You're supposed to talk once a week.
Okay.
But no one is held to that. And so, you know, once it basically takes a few weeks before you're like, hey, this guy hasn't talked since September 10th. What's the deal? So, sooner or later, this will become an issue, though. That
got
I can
it.
Tell you.
Got it. All right. So the situation that I want to talk about regarding you is the question you asked both Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love yesterday, where you inserted yourself into the team, right? You were asking essentially about the open door policy, but you said to both of them, if I was a receiver on your team, which would be bad for you, did you walk away happy because you made Matt LaFleur laugh at the idea of you being a wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers?
No, I walked away happy because he gave a good answer.
Okay.
Which is what my job is, right?
That's true.
I did that, you know, and look, the folks that don't know me or saw that clip on Packers.com or whatever, look, I assure you that when I do something, whether it's my long questions that I get a lot of grief about, mm-hmm. or this, I do have a reason for it. I believe in how I do this. And I think you will not hear me say many times, I'm really good at this, you know, because I always am very self-critical and I'm mm-hmm. never good enough, which is another issue for my therapist if I ever get one. But I think I'm pretty good at conversation with guys. I think I get guys to answer and get them to open up. I make them comfortable. I feel like I ask good questions, even if they're sometimes long. But I did definitely do that on purpose, not because I wanted people watching the video stream to think, yeah, I'm trying to picture Wilde in a, you know, number 81 jersey getting clocked as he goes across the middle by Javon Bullard. Although that is a funny image too.
It is, yeah.
But I was looking for a way to disarm them a little bit, to get a damn answer out of people about things that they didn't want to talk about. And this takes, me being the receiver, takes Romeo Dobbs out of the equation. Instead of asking what should Romeo have done, it's what should I do if I'm on this team? And both of them answered, right? Which is what my job is to get answers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, did I think I was pretty funny? Yeah.
You were proud of that one. Yeah, you were proud of that one.
But only because if both of those guys had shut it down, I wouldn't be proud of it at all. That's I'd be fair. Saying, well, dang it, I was wrong. That was the wrong approach to take. But, you know, and it's just like on Monday when I asked LaFleur about, you know, we talked about how you got all these different guys getting involved on offense and defense, and then this Romeo thing happens. Like, again, I called back to an earlier conversation we'd had with him, and it allowed him to talk about that. And so, but I think down deep, both Jordan and Matt, I don't want to say we're hurt by this, but I think both of them were confused and disappointed that if Romeo Dobbs was so unhappy and so frustrated and so disgruntled, that he didn't come to either of them. Right? I would be too. Like, look, without putting too much business on the street, if I have an issue with you, I'm going to tell you. because, first of all, I care about you, and I have high expectations for people that I think are really talented. And so if I'm not just going to shy away from that, because you got to be direct. And if I'm Romeo Doubs, I don't care if Matt LaFleur is going to be pissed. And again, this goes back into mental health and what his personality is and whatever else, but I'm going to confront this issue. And he chose not to. And if I'm Jordan Love, I'm like, dude, we work out together in the off season. We're friends. Yeah. I'm the guy throwing you the football. How do you not come to me? I'd have been here for you and we would have talked it through. And instead, for him to do that, I think it really, again, Jordan didn't say this, Matt didn't say this, but I think both of them were legitimately bothered and maybe even hurt that he did not come to them.
Yeah, it seemed that way to me too, from a viewer standpoint. Obviously, you weren't in the room with them. I'm sitting in Milwaukee watching these back. But that was my takeaway from the tone and some of the answers. What was that? This, I don't want to say it's going to damage the locker room or damage the chemistry. I wouldn't go quite that far, but I think it could certainly have a tiny impact or a small impact or even a medium impact in the short term. So that was all very surprising to me. Some of the responses and some of the lack of responses, but I thought you and your colleagues did a good job, obviously addressing the ginormous elephant in the room yesterday, and really your first opportunity to speak to a lot of guys about this situation. So it's a unique one. I imagine you've never covered anything quite like this in your career.
Yeah, I mean, every time there's been any sort of issue, the guy spoke publicly.
Yeah,
and I, you know, I was trying to tell Tausch on Wednesday, I don't think it's a slam dunk that he's going to talk. And again, doesn't owe it to me. But if you want to be able to move past stuff, I'm no PR crisis expert. I'm not Ari Fleischer. But get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. I know you don't want to talk to the media, but do it. Say as little as possible. But now it's done. That was fun, but now it's done. But he chose not to do that.
Yeah, I mean, let's make it clear, Jason, you've always been very good about this, right? Like, you don't give a damn if they talk to you, but you feel as if they owe it to the fans. And you've always self-described your role as a beat reporter and a longtime reporter on this team as a conduit to the fans, right? That is what your job is to deliver messages from those guys to the fans and be the guy in between. You're not a fan. Your job is a conduit to deliver those messages to the fans. And when guys don't speak about big time situations like this one, it impacts the fans' ability to comprehend what the heck is actually going on.
Right. And what I'm, the other layer to that is the team wants to move on.
Right.
They want this to be over with. And the fact that he didn't address it yesterday allows it to linger and allows it to, you just asked, when does a guy start getting fined for not speaking to the media? Eventually he will. Is he really going to spend the final, including the bye week, 13 weeks of the season not speaking? Because he's going to rack up some fines.
Yeah, and, so, he already missed the game check. Let's keep that in mind, too.
Right, right. So, again, I just get it. If I'm him, I get it over with. It was interesting. I was leaving yesterday from Lambeau. Things were a little bit later than normal. And so I was hurrying to one of Sid's soccer games. And I walk out of the media exit, and I almost get run over by Tim Van Boren from Fox 6 coming one way. And then he gets past me. I take a few steps forward, and behind me, Romeo Doubs and his girlfriend drive behind me. And Romeo did not stop the chat then either. But I don't know, man. I wish I understood it better. Because look, I don't take any joy in doing this. I mean, I take joy in doing this with you, but I don't take any joy in trashing guys.
Right.
Like, that's not how I'm wired. Like, if Rashawn Gary has one sack in his last 12 games, we're going to talk about it. But it's not like I'm anti-Rashawn Gary. Like, these are conversations we have to have. That's my job. And I don't take any pleasure in trashing Romeo Doubs. I'm not interested in doing that. But if I have to critique him and be critical, then that's what I have to do. And I just don't think that this is, from the moment he decided not to go to work last Thursday to now, I don't think he has handled this well.
From a 10,000 foot view for me, I tend to agree, but we will see if that changes over the course of the next week when we record the next episode of this. So let's recap the Rams, but I do want to fit in one more thing that happened in locker room with you, because I thought your question to Love on, look, it was maybe one of the riskiest throws he's ever made, but damn, was it beautiful the way it worked out. That bomb at the beginning of the game to Jaden Reed. You asked him how it would be graded with quarterback coach Tom Clements. In terms of decision-making, they would rate it a zero. And then, I don't believe him, but he said he wouldn't throw it again. I did not believe him when he said that. But that throw, Jason, it was Favre-esque in the risk-taking. And Jaden Reed played it amazingly in triple coverage. Bleep it. Reed's down there somewhere. Just throw it up, I believe, is the quote that's been making the rounds the last couple days. What'd you make, A, of that interaction on that throw, and B, what did you make of that throw when you watched it live on Sunday?
Dude, he flung it 61 yards in the air, and it was a flick of the wrist. You know who he looked like? He looked like 12.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when Brett Favre, who certainly had a cannon for arm too.
Sure did.
But Brett Favre, it was like, I don't want to say a full body convulsion.
No, but he's like really.
Right. He was extremely powerful. He had a cannon for an arm too. But it was like the whole thing. And with both Love and with Rodgers, there is a flick of the wrist thing where it's just, it was, and I sounded like Chris Farley. Remember that time he threw that pass down to Jaden Reed? That was awesome. But I did, after we got done talking about it, I was like, still a pretty cool throw though, right? Which is, you know, that's not even a question. That's a statement. But it's true. It was. Like, it was, you know, I'm not young and cool. Is it okay if I say that was a sick throw?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was.
It was.
And so I did. I was super curious because, you know, again, I had written a story for the State Journal, and I kind of used the fact that he showed up for the Minnesota game in a Favre jersey and said basically, hey, it was a great homage, but he didn't have to take it all the way to playing like Brett Favre too, which he did against. And I had some pushback on social media after I said it to Homer, like, well, if he wants to be like a Pro Football Hall of Famer, that's fine with me. Okay, there's nuance here. Let's understand. Brett Favre was a great quarterback. He is one of the all-time greats, but he threw 336 interceptions during his career. They lost games because of his boneheaded interceptions. They were on the precipice of a Super Bowl when he threw an interception. When they lost 4th and 26, everybody brings up 4th and 26, but he then throws an interception after 4th and 26 to prevent them from going and winning the game in spite of 4th and 26. We never found out if their defense could contain the greatest show on turf, because he threw 6 interceptions, 3 of which were returned for touchdowns in a playoff game. Now, Jordan Love hasn't done those things. But if you're telling me that you watched that interception he threw from the back of the end zone when he landed on his keister on the back line, and you didn't think, oh my God, that was Farvian, then I can't help you, as Winston Moss would say. So I'm not saying that he's going to take all, but he is taking more risks. And I thought part of our conversation with him yesterday, and Tom Silverstein from the Journal Sentinel kind of took this approach with it of, you know, you're not a first-year starter anymore, right? You're a second-year guy. You're pushing the boundaries. You're seeing what you can do. You're not taking the check down all the time. You're taking some risks. And I'm for that. I mean, I'm old enough to remember when people were criticizing Aaron Rodgers for not taking enough risks.
Yes.
Someone actually calling the show and saying he doesn't throw enough interceptions. So I am not killing Jordan at all. I'm just saying that he is taking risks now, and sometimes they're going to work out, like the deep ball to Reed, and sometimes they're not, like the interception he throws to Wicks. Let's not forget, that Minnesota game was still very winnable. And that is a colossal mistake. The interception in San Francisco on a first down play is a colossal mistake. It doesn't mean he sucks as a quarterback. It means he, like Matt LaFleur said, All quarterbacks go through it, and he's going through it.
He's going through it, but some and you just mentioned the three big ones, right? The three interceptions, San Francisco, Minnesota, and the pick six, his first career pick six on Sunday. Fundamentally a disgusting football play. I mean, undeniably so, right? Like, Rashid Walker doesn't block anybody. Then he's flailing his arm to signal the love, hey, get rid of it. And then ultimately it's just, you know, you're just throwing something and hope it hits the ground, and ultimately it ends in six for Los Angeles. Ultimately, they win that game, though, and that's what matters, right? A win, you're 3-2, you're above 500 entering week six, now do a two-game home stretch, which includes the Arizona Cardinals this weekend. The thing that actually worries me the most, Jason, is the Packers, you know, stopping the run, which, of course, has been an issue for Packers fans like myself for, I don't know, 15 years now. James Conner's a pretty good running back. Kyron Williams had over 100 yards for the Rams last week, and their offense is, I would argue, worse than the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals have more weapons offensively, which includes James Conner. I think this game coming up on Sunday has the makings of a shootout. The over-under is only 47.5, which is the fourth highest line in the NFL this weekend. I think we're going to have points. The Packers are playing a pretty bad defense, and their defense, who's looked okay, is playing a good offense, at least a kind of a sexy offense with Kyler Murray and Marvin Harrison and Trey McBride, and I mentioned James Conner. They've got some weapons. So I'm intrigued what this matchup will bring Sunday at Lambeau Field. How about you?
Yeah, me too. And one quick thing on Love, like the fact that you could pick out those interceptions underscores the fact that he doesn't do it very often.
No.
Right. So that is actually, I know it maybe didn't sound like it for me in real time, but it's actually a form of praise that it's so easy to pinpoint. Ding, ding, ding. These were the knuckleheaded plays he made.
Real quick. Does the read throw we were just talking about, does that quote unquote count as a knucklehead play, even though it worked out?
If your position coach gives you a zero on the grade chart,
the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Sorry.
But it was still cool.
It was sick, bro. Remember that time?
That was awesome, Jordan.
It's such a great reference.
Look, Arizona's no joke. Like, I understand San Francisco's beat up. I get it. But they still went in to Santa Clara and beat them. Right? Like, that is no small feat. Just like the Vikings beating the 49ers. I get that they are struggling right now. They don't have a lot of key pieces. It still says something to me that both those teams have beaten them. That said, if it's a shootout, that'd be great, because Tausch gives me a hard time, but yeah, entertain me, right? I want to see Maserati Marv, and I want to see Wicks and Reed and Dobbs, theoretically, making big plays, and that makes for an entertaining football game. But I think I want to touch on something else you said at the beginning of that, and that is, it feels like no matter who the defensive coordinator is, no matter who the system, whatever system it is, they just can't stop the run.
Yeah.
And I will just say this, and I don't proclaim to be, Johnny Football, but I asked Jason Rebrovich if there were any drawbacks to this aggressive system, and he, like months ago, and he said, no. I don't know. It looks to me like stopping the run. And in addition to not getting a pass rush from your front four, appears to be right now at least a drawback. So, they've given up. Has every running back they've faced gotten over 100 yards? I can't remember if the Titans running back, Pollard, did not get over 100 yards.
No, I don't think so.
And I don't think Aaron Jones get over 100 yards by the end of the game?
Oh, I think he did.
The bottom line is their run defense has not been good enough, and their pressure has not been good enough. I saw a stat the other day that they're still seventh in the league in sacks, and they're in the top 10 in pressure percentage. But all that is Tennessee. It's all Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
That skewed the numbers. So, like, if you took out – I know you can't do this because there's only been five games, but if you took out their worst game and their best game, like sometimes you do with, like, test scores,
right,
you get a – I mean, their grade is bad.
For
in
sure.
Pass rush.
Just a real quick follow-up, Jason. Jones finished with 93, and Tennessee just couldn't rush the ball. I think they finished with a total of like 30 rushing yards because they were playing from behind the whole game.
Right. So, to me, that tells me that this is another piece that, and you know, we're going to talk later Thursday. We're going to talk to Jeff Hafley again. And I really enjoy my exchanges with him. Like, I think he's a really smart guy. And he doesn't want to throw his guys under the bus. The closest he came was last week when I asked him, you know, look, I get, you know, you're protecting your guys, but Rashawn Gary's a $96 million player. Like, you talk about his expectations. He expects to be doing more than he's doing, right? And his answer was, look, we need more from Rashawn, and Rashawn needs more from us. And he went out on a limb, which coaches don't like to do, and predicted that he would have a big game against the Rams. Didn't happen. So now we'll see if it happens against the Cardinals.
We sure will. All right, rapid fire edition of Four Downs. We've got about 10 minutes left on our free Zoom recording here, Jason. So let's knock through these. Aside from the defensive line, who you just highlighted, most disappointing group through five games this season for you as you analyze this team?
That's a tough question because I think Jair Alexander, if he's healthy, solves this. But like, I don't know. I don't think Eric Stokes has played particularly great, right? Like, he's got a lot to play for this
year. Yeah, he does.
Having not gotten the fifth-year option. And obviously, Corey Ballantyne, they didn't like what they saw from him against Minnesota. He gets beat on the double move by Jordan Addison. And then they go with a different approach completely to their nickel package. And they move Nixon outside against the Rams. So, you know, they need Jair back. But I thought that they were pretty deep there, but you lose your top two guys. They miss time. I mean, Carrington Ballantyne came back last week. But, like, you play without your two best guys, there's probably going to be some challenges, and obviously there have been.
Second down, teach me something on the injury report, because I looked at it yesterday, and it looked like a really long list, right? I think there was 15, 18 names on there. But most of them were limited participation. I get it. You know, we're entering week six. It's the middle of October. People are hurt, right? Everybody's kind of playing hurt at this point in the NFL season. So when I see that many names on an injury report as a fan, should I be worried? Should I struggle with looking at how long that list was yesterday and not going, huh, we might have a surprise on Sunday come 10:30.
I mean, not unless somebody doesn't practice now on Thursday or Friday. Like, again, the Jair example is the great one. Like, he's on the injury report, is limited with a quad. He had just had a pick six in Nashville. Mm-hmm. No one is expecting him to miss the game against the Vikings. They game planned, I am convinced, to have him follow Justin Jefferson around. And then he suffers a separate injury at the end of Thursday's practice. And that's what changes everything. If guys are on the list, look, if I was a coach, I would put everybody with every injury on the list, because then on Friday now, because ever since they did away with probable way back in like 2017 or something like that, if you're cleared to play, you just come off the list. And I would predict that by the end of the week, they'll have Watson as doubtful, maybe questionable, and they'll have Devontae Wyatt ruled out. And maybe another guy or two is on there as questionable just because there's a outside chance they don't play. But there's no way that all 15 to 18 names will still be on there by Friday afternoon.
All right. Thanks for making me feel better. Third down. You inserting yourself as a Packers wide receiver had me thinking, I have no idea what your athletic background is. What sports have you played? Were you a football player?
No, I lasted about 2 weeks playing freshman football.
Okay.
And then I joined the golf team, which was a really good decision. I wish I could play. Like, the girls now want to play. Maddie played on the high school golf team.
Mm-hmm.
Sid is a pretty good golfer, so we're going to start golfing more. But the last time I played golf was in Tausch has a charity called the Trifecta Foundation to support reading. And he would do an annual golf outing. And I played with Will Whitaker one year. And we were at the bowl. And the competition was who lost fewer balls. And I think I lost 19 on the day, and he lost 18.
Wow.
Golf sucks. I hate golf. Like, what I hate about golf is if you don't do it regularly, you might as well not do it at all. Because it's not fun if you stink. It's frustrating. So I'm not – I played golf. I always like to say in basketball, I was a 20-20-20 guy. I played when we were up 20, down 20, or there were 20 seconds left. And then baseball was my game. I was okay at that.
What position did you play in baseball?
Second base, third base, a little bit of shortstop.
I could
field. Not a great hitter, not a terrible hitter. Once broke my ankle scoring from first on a base hit and slipped and injured myself.
Well, that's good though. You could tell Devontae Wyatt and Christian Watson all about the rehab that goes into that.
No doubt. Yeah, back in 1989. I would just say this, and I'm not a perfect parent by any means, but I think Paula and I have made sure that we do a much better job of supporting our girls in their athletic endeavors than maybe other people did when I was their age.
Very well said. All right, fourth down. I'm struggling with how to frame this one because I feel like there are two really good candidates on the Packers for season-long awards. I think one of them, obviously, is Xavier McKinney. 5 games, 5 interceptions for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know if he's the front runner through 5 weeks, but he's certainly in the conversation. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Coach of the Year. I think Matt LaFleur, although they're only 3-2 right now, I think he's got a good case with how he handled the 2 weeks Jordan Love missed for Coach of the Year. I know you're not a gambling man, and I know you're not a fan, but if I was to say, hey, put your Monopoly money where your mouth is on one of those two, do you feel more confident on either of those?
Yeah, probably LaFleur.
Okay.
Like, if they continue. Yeah, I mean, look, they got a lot of winnable football games on their schedule. Now, again, there's always the danger of catastrophic injuries, and who knows how this season is going to unfold. But I think he's done a hell of a coaching job. Now, there are other guys that probably – will be in the conversation too, obviously. But I think I've been really to do what he did for those 2 games. They didn't have Love. I can't imagine somebody not looking at that and going, well, that's, I mean, yeah, fine. You know, whatever. Like that was impressive. As far as McKinney, you know, I don't know what his numbers ultimately will be, but man, I am not a fan, as you pointed out, but because I drew that comparison, and it wasn't even about his play. It was about his magnetism to Woodson. And then Woodson coming on the show and backing me up. And then, like, when McKinney got another interception against the Rams, Woodson's tweeting about it. I said we talked to McKinney for about 3 minutes on Wednesday. And at the end, as the group is dispersing, I said, and he knows all about it. Like I sent him the podcast with Woodson talking about him. Like he and I, we've kind of hit it off a little bit. So we talk in the locker room. And I said, make me look better and better every week. And he like legit, like not courtesy laughed, like laughed. And I really enjoyed that because he is a stud. I'm not saying he's going to end up in Canton like Charles Woodson, but he is really good. And again, send your thank you notes to the New York Giants headquarters because how they let that guy out the building, I have no idea.
Completely beyond me. I mean, he is unbelievable. I mean, this stretch is unheard of, right? 5 picks in your first 5 games as a member of a team. But it is fun stuff. All right, I play a game on Mr. Irrelevant every Wednesday real quick. It's called One Word, Jason, which I know you're going to hate the idea of. But this isn't a Packers topic. I'm just curious if you can sum this up in one word. Robert Saleh fired as the New York Jets head coach after 5 weeks into the season. One word to describe the Robert Saleh firing.
What was the word that Rodgers used? That he was offended by the suggestion that he had in. So did you see? I'm not playing this game. Just like yes or no. Did you see?
Fair enough.
The story, I think it was from Connor Hughes, that Saleh came to work and told the coaches that he was stripping Hackett of his of his play calling duties.
Yes.
I had not seen that, and then somebody told me about it yesterday, and I was like, oh my God, really? And so now let's put together the timeline before we run out of free Zoom. He comes in, strips Rodgers' guy of his play calling duties. Presumably Hackett, not like, oh, Aaron, help me, please. Just giving him a heads up, right? Hey, just got done with a meeting with Saleh. They're going to let you know, the other guy called the plays. That, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just wanted you to be aware.
Yeah.
10 minutes later, Woody Johnson is firing Saleh. Like, again, I'm not Will Trent. Investigate. Great show, by the way. You should watch it. It's on ABC. Great show. I'm not Lenny Briscoe. Is that better? I'm not Ray Curtis.
Gibbs from NCIS would be good. That'd be one that I understand.
Yeah.
Mark Harmon.
I'm not Mark Harmon. Yeah, there you go. Doesn't it make you wonder? Like, he can say that he's offended by that suggestion that he had anything to do with this, but I mean,
it's Aaron Rodgers, Jason. It's just what I've come to expect. And I'm not going to speak for you. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but that's what I've come to expect.
Yeah. The bottom line is that it's disappointing. And, but Robert Saleh didn't win enough games. Like, regardless of what hand Rodgers had or didn't have in it, he didn't win enough games.
True that.
And it's hard to argue against it.
Yeah. It's just the timing of it is strange.
5 games in.
Yeah. It's, I don't want to say unheard of, but it's really strange. But anyway, we're running out of time. That's Jason Wilde. You can get him on X, Twitter, at Jason J. Wilde. Rob Domofsky's back, so less people will be following Jason, is my understanding, on Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Alex_Strofe. Even less people are following me now. But we do this every Thursday. We call it Weekly Wilde or Dirty Laundry or You Get What You Tolerate. I don't know. But thanks for coming along for the ride with us. I stole your line on accident there. Go ahead. Finish
Take care.
Off.
Be good.
There you go. We'll talk to you next week.